Welcome back to Technotopia, the podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, we have crypto investor Jalakumar Mukhija. This is Technotopia.
In the next 60 seconds, you're going to learn how the Flatiron School can change your life. The Flatiron School will help teach you everything you need to get the job in code, data science, or design. They'll also prepare you for the jobs that don't even exist yet, because this is a school designed to educate you in the art of change. So if you're feeling stuck, bored, or unfulfilled, Flatiron will teach you how to change things. You'll learn by making things, breaking things, and discovering how the future is being built. The results speak for themselves. Go to flatironschool.com/podcast and read about our graduates' new careers, salary ranges, upcoming courses, and explore these exciting new careers. You can start building your own career in coding, data science, or digital design at one of Flatiron's local WeWork campuses, or you can take courses online. Go to flatironschool.com/podcast, read the reviews, and sign up for a free intro course. That's all we ask. Enrollment is now open. It's time to future-proof yourself and change things, fix things, make things better, starting with you. flatironschool.com/podcast.
Welcome back to Technotopia, a podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, we have Jalak Jobanputra. She's founder of Future Perfect Ventures, an avid investor, and you're also into blockchain now, right?
Yes, I am. Not just now, over the last 5 years.
Well, 5 years is a. I guess that's like 50 years in blockchain years, right?
That's true. At least 50 years. Sometimes it feels like 100.
My favorite is I get these entrepreneurs who say that they've been in blockchain since like 2015. As if they had been there at the creation. It's fascinating.
Yes, and I don't claim to have been there at the creation, but I went to my first Bitcoin conference in 2013 and got the same goosebumps I did when I first logged on to the internet. So I knew that the fund needed to focus on that, and in some capacity ended up being a large part of our first fund.
So let's talk about that a little bit. What is it about blockchain that you think is so familiar and also so innovative?
Well, if you look at what's happened over the last 10 years, since basically smartphones came onto the scene, we've seen an explosion of data that's been created, that's being transmitted over the internet. And I looked at what was ahead as the next 3 billion people come online, and we have more and more smartphones being used around the world. I mean, until very recently, it was primarily in the developed world. But now that the smartphone prices have come down, they're more accessible to a broader swath of the world. So that was going to create a lot more data, a lot more connectivity issues, as well as security issues around the data. Now, you take that and then you add on the fact that we now have billions of sensors on cars, on street lamps, you know, all over and in smart homes. And the machine-to-machine communication mm-hmm. is also going to have to be secure, instantaneous. And I felt like the internet wasn't really on its own going to be able to handle this data deluge. And after digging into blockchain technology, after going to that first Bitcoin conference, and understanding more around, you know, how the blockchain itself works in terms of the security of the data, I just became fascinated on how this could be the underpinning of this kind of hyper-connected global world, and also how we can keep our data more secure.
Okay, so I mean, I think at what stage are we in terms of the cycle? Is this us logging into, I don't know, a PuTTY terminal, through a PuTTY terminal into an Elm instance where we're basically checking our email and maybe visiting some other websites? Or is this a little further on? Are we in like are we in 2000? Are we in 1998? Are we in 95? Or are we 2015 in terms of blockchain?
Well, my answer seems to change by the day, but I pretty consistently, I go back to, I do think we're in about 1993, 1994 internet. We are still extremely early. I mean, there's a lot of hype out there, especially In the last year, I mean, I can tell you back in 2013 when I started investing in the space, there was very little talk about blockchain, if any talk about blockchain. There was some talk about Bitcoin and obviously the Mt. Gox and Silk Road scandals and all the lost Bitcoin there. So there's been a lot of hype. And so often I think we're getting ahead of ourselves in terms of thinking, you know, where the technology actually is. There are certainly lots of proof of concepts happening with large enterprises and IBM, Walmart, a lot of big names. But there's been very little like production. And that's just because we're talking about, you know, ripping out old systems and replacing them with this more decentralized infrastructure. So that's going to take some time. Now, in terms of consumer usage, we're not seeing anything other than really, you know, the run-up in cryptocurrency. But I think that's going to change, just like we didn't start using e-commerce right away and we didn't start buying, you know, kind of everything imaginable online in 1995. You know, we started with books and then moved on to other items. And so I think that's what we're going to see. Now, I do think this evolution is going to happen much quicker just because we have so much talent from all around the world and not just, you know, one region focused on this. So I'm pretty excited by what I'm seeing. And I think it's going to continue to accelerate.
Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting point. So let's talk a little bit about innovation outside of the U.S. A few of the podcasts have talked about that very specifically, that the innovation engine of the U.S. is dying down. So in 10, 20 years, we're going to see something completely different. What's your take on that?
Well, I'm a little biased there because I was born in Nairobi and am of Indian origin. So when we moved to the United States when I was young, I went back to India and Africa, you know, in the early 80s when these were very undeveloped markets. Mm-hmm. And now I actually invest in those markets as well as many other around the world. And I've always been a believer from those early experiences that talent resides everywhere. And it's really the opportunities that we've had in countries like the United States for education, for connectivity, for, you know, moving beyond like agriculture and, you know, not having to work in the field that has enabled us to succeed. And what we've seen in the last 10 20 years in places like China and India and Latin America, Southeast Asia, all over the world, there's been a lot of development. A lot of it has been spurred by technology. Mm-hmm. I remember going to Kenya in 2008, I believe, or 2009, and first seeing M-Pesa, which is the mobile money system. Mm-hmm. There. And we had nothing close to it at the time. We still really don't in the United States. And they were using, you know, their very basic feature phones, but they were able to have functionality that we didn't have here. And that whole concept of leapfrogging has kind of continued as more and more people get educated, get to the middle class, and start innovating on their own. And so, you know, while I wouldn't say innovation in the United States is dead, I can see other innovating quicker for real world problems because they're actually the ones mm-hmm. on the ground and now have all the tools to build companies in these spaces. So for me, it's really important to build the bridge of you know, all the talent and experience that resides here with the on the ground kind of innovation and creativity that exists in these markets to kind of solve the problems and challenges that we all have.
So that's an interesting point. What you're basically saying is that a few small structural changes to a society is all it takes to essentially leapfrog a number of technologies. Like we in the States got kind of a boost. We were essentially agrarian until World War II, and we got the boost of technology around the Cold War. So that gave us a massive head start. But as I noticed the same thing in Central Europe, I noticed the same thing in Eastern Europe. So I think the exact same thing is happening. After you get away from the problem of trying to figure out how to put bread on shelves, you can finally figure out how to send money via mobile phones.
Right. And the reality on the ground in a lot of these places is that they're not institutions like we have, banks. There are over 2 billion people around the world that are unbanked completely, who don't have access to financial services and savings accounts. And mobile money helped bridge that by offering the ability to transfer money without bank accounts. Now, a lot of services are now being built on top of that. And then if you look at something like Bitcoin or cryptocurrency, where you can transfer value across borders with very low friction and very low cost, that frees up a lot of kind of GDP that's kind of locked up right now in the form of human capital, in the form of services that people can't take advantage of. So just as an example, I invested in a company called BitPesa in 2014, and they've become the default Bitcoin blockchain platform in Africa. They started off in Kenya, and they're now in 17 countries. And a lot of their transactions are B2B, where a small business from in Kenya may be dealing with a supplier in Nigeria, or a Nigerian business dealing with a supplier in China. And right now, it can cost up to 20% of a transaction in just banking fees, because there's and FX fees, because there's so many conversions of currencies that need to happen behind the scenes. If you just take one exchange, fiat to Bitcoin, that and create a more instantaneous means of transfer that allows the money to reach its destination much quicker, and also in a secure way and with much lower fees. So I believe that this technology can be even more transformational than the internet and mobile was in a lot of these markets.
Interesting. So I always ask this question, we'll mix it up a little bit. What does the blockchain look like in 20 years? Do we see it? Do we not see it? Is it part of our lives? Do we not understand how it's part of our lives?
I believe it's going to be fairly invisible to our lives. I mean, those of us that live in a pre-blockchain world will certainly notice differences, just as I noticed differences from, before the internet was around and before mobile platforms were around. So we'll definitely see more efficiencies. I believe we'll see new business models emerge, just like Uber was built on mobile and couldn't have existed before mobile was more ubiquitous. We'll see new business models and companies emerge that take advantage of the unique characteristics of blockchain technology. But just like the average person doesn't know how the internet works, I don't think it's going to be relevant how blockchain technology works. It's just going to make transactions more seamless, frictionless, and our data more secure.
And then let's go a little further. What does the developing world look like? I mean, I like to go pretty broad here. So given all the issues with clean water, global warming, etc., does the developing world fix that for itself? What does Nairobi look like in 20 years?
Well, I
sorry if I went a little Arthur C. Clarke on you. I don't want to.
No, it's this is something I think about, and what's really exciting is that the answer is we don't know.
Okay.
And technology in itself cannot solve all the world's problems, right? We need to use technology as an enabler, and if you look at a lot of countries around the world, they may have a lot of corruption in their government. They don't have freedom of speech. So there are elements of this technology that can address those issues. There are a number of protocols that are emerging on the blockchain that can actually allow for VPNs and offline browsing. So government can't really shut down its citizens' access to information. There's companies that are creating, if you start thinking about the sharing economy and what's been achievable through the sharing economy, through ride sharing and Airbnb, you start to think that you actually can go straight, peer to peer without having an intermediary that is collecting fees and kind of deciding, curating who gets on a platform. But we as individuals can decide, who we want to do business with, and they're authenticated and their data, we can automatically trust them because they've been authenticated on this highly secure network. I think the world is going to look very different. Mm-hmm. However, we still have to address geopolitical challenges and all of that. I mean, I think every time we're seeing it in China now, where they just shut down all cryptocurrency exchanges in response to the fact that they were seeing a lot of capital move out of the country, and they have capital controls in place. Mm-hmm. And so they wanted to get more of a hold on what was happening with these crypto exchanges. And so governments will try to shut down technology, but we're still seeing the overall global growth of this. We just have to make sure that the technology gets out there in a responsible way, that we're working with regulators and governments so it's not completely shut down. So that's why it's hard to predict exactly, what's going to happen in 20 years. But I believe in supporting the entrepreneurs who see, a more connected, secure, a freer world where every individual is kind of allowed to reach their full potential. And that's what's exciting to me about this technology. Okay.
Yeah, I respect your refusal to say that there's going to be flying cars everywhere and robots are going to carry us around from.
Well, I grew up watching the Jetsons.
Okay.
we still don't have the housekeeper robots. I would like one, but I'm still waiting for that to happen.
In these last few minutes, what do you think about the this ICO/token sale thing? Is this how long is it going to take before this thing tips over and then tips back up again?
Well, we have seen in 2018 an overall softening of the market in terms of the number of ICOs that are coming to market. We've seen more regulation from jurisdictions all over the world. South Korea has been now mandating KYC registration and making sure they know who's trading on these exchanges. So a lot of that has dampened the frenzy that we saw in 2017. I still believe there's a role for tokens. I'm very excited about a world where we can, tokenize physical assets, digital assets, our own data, be able to have control over what we're sharing with different entities and can be authenticated mm-hmm. by different entities. However, it's going to take a long time to get to that world, and we do have to weed out bad actors.
Sure.
There's been a lot of fraud in the market, and I'd love to see the industry self-regulate, and I think overall regulators, with the exception of China, have been fairly hands-off. But we're definitely seeing the market start to mature and evolve. So 2018 is going to be crucial to see, if we can get the bad actors out and start realizing the full potential of tokenization.
Mm-hmm. And if you had an ideal company that you wanted to invest in, what's your current investment thesis, I guess?
Well, with our first fund, we were very excited about blockchain at the intersection of other emerging technologies such as AI and Internet of Things and marketplaces. And we were very early in the market with that thesis. And I think the time is getting more and more to be ripe for the intersection of these different areas. So, an example, if you look at the possibility of creating solar micro grids around the world where, electricity is intermittent and not reliable, if you have one solar panel that's kind of collecting data on where the electricity is going within a grid, and then a smart contract is automatically debiting accounts of the people that are using that electricity in real time, that opens up, why someone would own a solar panel and be able to be compensated for making that investment. And we could have more efficient distribution and no, leakage of what's really happening within that grid. So, So that intersection is really interesting. I'm very excited about self-sovereign identity. I invested in a few companies out of the first fund, including Civic, which are kind of building blockchain-based identity systems where you can actually own your identity and pieces of your data, and you have third-party authenticators. And once they've authenticated that data, you can then if you want to open a bank account, you just provide the information that they need. They can trust it, but they don't necessarily have to hold on to that data and store it on a central server that like they do now. And those servers get hacked. So you can have portability of data. You can own it, and then you're not creating a situation where it's susceptible to hacking and being sold on the dark web.
All right, very cool. So you're over at Future Perfect Ventures now, so people can just reach out for you and you're going to give them millions of dollars.
Well, I would love to give them millions of dollars. I'm very excited about the caliber of entrepreneurs that are approaching me, and yes, we're fully open for business for the entrepreneurs that are looking to change the world with this new technology.
All right, beautiful. This has been great. I like the I like to hear multiple sources saying essentially the same thing, which basically says that we might be on the right track in terms of this whole future predicting nonsense that I'm trying to do here.
Well, we can only try.
All right. This has been Technotopia. I'm John Biggs. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you next week. Technotopia is brought to you by Happy Fun Corp. Happy Fun Corp is a design-driven technology company in Brooklyn, New York that specializes in building mobile and web applications for startups and Fortune 500 companies. Whether it's a new mobile or web application that will help people experience the internet in a fun new way, or software that will interface with a new piece of top-secret hardware, Happy Fun Corp is always up to the challenge. Big or small, Happy Fun Corp loves building software and loves working with great people. Come build with them. HappyFunCorp.com. Technotopia is also sponsored by Jaywalk. Jaywalk is a new app that pays you to walk. You can try it out at jaywalk.me. It's created by me, John Biggs, and a few of my friends. Jaywalk.me, please check it out.